Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
The last weekend of winter.
Is that what it is?
It is. Tuesday, spring.
Wow, it already feels like spring.
We're a month into spring, no?
Yeah, it sure feels like it, doesn't it?
Yesterday was almost summer weather. I put all my patio furniture. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Toronto had 20 degrees.
Yeah, that's crazy. But not out west, though. Out west, it's cold.
Well, finally we get the life of them.
Right, yeah.
Usually we're getting the calls from Vancouver this time. You're going, oh, yeah, the flowers are up.
My good buddy's a realtor in Penticton, BC, and usually when we're minus 40, he's sending me pictures of him with his shorts on, having a margarita on the patio, and I'm just like, ugh. Now we get to pay him back this way.
That's got to change the market here, though.
It already has, right? I mean, the great weather brings out the optimism. A lot more showings, you're not transit through snow and stuff like that. So yeah, we're
more daylight, more time.
More daylight. I was talking to Greg on the way in actually about photos and stuff like that. And he's like, during the wintertime, he goes, my last shoot is 2 o'clock in the afternoon because I got to get it done by 4.
Yeah.
Now he's, what do you think now, Greg? You're probably
5.
Oh yeah. I can start a shoot at 4 o'clock now easily and be done by 6. Sunset's not until 6:45, 7 now, yeah. So it's fantastic.
So it makes it easier.
When is it appropriate now to take the snow pictures off?
I think we're getting to the point where you've already done it, haven't
now,
you?
Now, yeah.
But you've already gone through and done a bunch of...
We sell the listing so fast, there's no snow pictures left.
I like that.
Is he a salesman or video?
Yeah, you know what? There we go, yeah.
Wow.
Now, do you have to go back or can you Photoshop the snow out?
We have to go back for that. Basically, to do any kind of Photoshop work on the photos, we have to know what's underneath. And so if you've got stonework underneath all that snow that I have no idea is there and I just put grass there, then we're misrepresenting the property and that's just bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat, though, that we're getting it. Goodbye snow pictures.
Well,
we're going to see some in July. We always do.
We always do. We always do. There's always some people that still have their snow pictures in July, just like there's always some people that have their beautiful grassy pictures in January,
I will give Greg credit. His work is fabulous. Like it really the videos, is. The pictures. I mean, Paul looks 30 in the pictures.
I knew that was coming.
The Photoshop. Should be helping the Royals there with the Photoshopping.
How long does it take you to make Paul look the way he does?
He shows up naturally good, don't
we? Oh, there we go.
Somebody's looking for
boss
a raise.
Employee.
Somebody's looking for a raise.
Remember, guys. Platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde.
Yeah.
So are we opening pools early to make places look better, even if you're not going to use it?
There's lots of people that are talking about opening their pools. I was joking around the other day about putting my jet skis in the water. I mean, I know we're nowhere near that yet, but yeah, I know it's if you have a beautiful backyard. I had a conversation with a gentleman. Well, actually, last week, there was a gentleman who called in the show with the pool, remember?
Yep.
Swimming upstream guy, yeah.
Swimming upstream guy, yeah. But right now, we're getting to the point where some people are going to start opening their pools. And if your main feature of your backyard is your pool and interlock and a beautiful backyard, if you want to get your home sold, it's time to open your pool.
So if you're not going to run it and clean it, should you leave it covered until it looks really good? Or should you take the cover off to show what the pool looks like?
If you're going
to
open it, open it.
You're not going to open it.
Like if you're going to open it, then you got to keep it running and clean. Otherwise, keep the cover on if you're not going to clean it.
It's going to look terrible. It's going to look terrible.
They never look good in the winter, though. Unless they're open and running.
I don't know. You should have seen my pool one year.
After
Greg got a hold of it, it looked like it was the bluest water you've ever seen, and my in-ground spa had steam coming off it. Meanwhile, it was closed.
We can work a little bit of magic to help them out.
How did you decide what temperature to make the spa?
hey, you know what's making headlines this week? These unpaid collections or whatever that the city's
parking.
Doing. That's scanning 14, 15, 20 years, which is absolutely crazy. And the reason it's hitting headlines is because people are upset that their credit scores are taking the plunge that they are. And in today's world, the credit score is massive in being able to get approved for a mortgage.
I don't have much confidence in credit scores, and I'll tell you why.
I don't either, but the lenders, unfortunately, it's everything they look at.
But this week I had one go down and one go up.
Yeah.
It doesn't make, and I no. didn't, so and I didn't change a thing.
You're checking your credit after Connor called last
I
week.
I always
eh?
Check my credit.
You do, eh?
Yeah.
Where a lot of people are starting to do it. A lot of the banks now give you the feature where you can go in and check your credit for free. So, so a lot of people are starting to do it, and they'll call me and they'll say my credit score is, like, before they even do the application, my credit score. But what people need to understand is that there's two credit score reports. There's the Equifax one and TransUnion. So depending on which one your bank is using, doesn't mean that the lenders for the mortgage use the same one. And a lot of lenders now are look at both because one will miss something, the other one will have it. So
how is that possible?
We got to be careful. Well, yeah. It depends on the reporting, right? So if you get a car loan from Ford, Ford may report it to Equifax and not to TransUnion. So therefore, if you do a TransUnion report, it's not there. But on the Ford one, it is. Mortgage lenders, no different. There's some mortgage lenders still refuse to put mortgages on the credit bureau. So if you have a mortgage with a specific lender that doesn't report, then you have no idea that the person has a mortgage.
I didn't think mortgages were on.
Oh, mortgages have been on for about 5 years or so.
Really?
And we're seeing more and more of them. The big banks, they all put them on there for sure now. The non-bank lenders, most of them are on there, but there's still probably a handful of them that just don't report to the credit bureau right now.
Did they come on when the cell companies came on too around
yeah,
that
Yeah, just after actually. The cell companies were first, and they created a little bit of a ruckus. But now I think both TransUnion and Equifax don't score cell phone companies as high. So in other words, if you miss a payment with your cell phone, it doesn't impact you as large as if you missed a loan payment or a credit card or mortgage payment. That would hit you harder.
And how is
but
it,
scores are everything.
But how is it that they don't? How is it they don't communicate with each other to make sure that their score is the same as the other score?
Because they're different companies. They're
I know,
totally
but
different.
That means one is getting something and one is missing something.
So one's algorithm is different than the other. So there's no science behind it. Well, there is to them, but to us, they won't tell us what the science is on it. And I've had scenarios where I've done a mortgage or I pulled a credit bureau for somebody who's had a bankruptcy and or a consumer proposal 3 years ago, and they've got 750 credit score, and then somebody who's never missed a payment but is at their limit on their credit card, and they've got a 640 score, and you look at it, you say, I'd rather lend to this person than this person, but that score is way higher. And believe it or not, default insurers and lenders, the number one criteria is credit score that they look at before they open the door to go to the next step.
So note to self, check your credit.
Check your credit.
And I mean, we saw last week with Connor. Like, his credit went from 750 to 600 just like that.
Yeah. Don't miss payments. Like, if you're going to struggle, especially on a mortgage payment, if you miss a mortgage payment, boy, it's so difficult to get mortgage financing these days. You probably got to transition to an alternate lender. Because the mortgage lenders have no appetite whatsoever because they don't want to spend a penny at calling people to look for mortgage payments. They want nothing to do with that. So for them, it's all about profit.
Now, speaking of mortgages, there's a company that will not mortgage properties in Quebec that are in the flood zone. Is this something that...
But that's been ongoing.
No, but that was insurance. It used to always be insurance. This is now you can't even get a mortgage.
Who's that company?
Desjardins. Desjardins came out and said, we no longer, and now, but a number of lenders. So Constance Bay, Constance Bay, was it 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there were the big floods.
And 17 and 19, and even and 19, even yeah. last year, there was last year, the year, yeah. last year, yeah.
So the important thing for the lenders that we work with today is that, number one, if the appraisal comes in, that it's in a floodplain, that's already a red flag. So then the next step is, depending on how strong the client is and what the loan-to-value is, and the next step would be, okay, like you need to provide us proof that the insurance company is aware that you're in a floodplain zone and that your property is insured. Because if that's not in place,
which is rare,
then we
anyways,
can't lend you money.
A lot of insurance
companies will, but they just charge a premium.
And those areas are stigmatized too, right?
Of course
like
they are.
Where I am in Constance Bay, like if I flood, all of Constance Bay is underwater.
Yeah.
Yet I struggle to get overland protection. Yeah.
Even though you're way up high.
Even though I'm way up high. Yeah. They're like, you're in Constance Bay, sorry. I mean, I got it, but I had to go through, I don't know, maybe six or seven different companies.
Yeah, you got
to
shop it.
I had to shop it, yeah, but there's a lot of people in Constance Bay who have never been flooded. Some people live up the hill on the other side of the road, and they can't get overland insurance.
Yep. Yeah, so, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's the important thing for the lender. The lender needs to know that there's proper insurance coverage in place in case that happens. And if there is, then generally speaking, they have an appetite to lend on it. If there's no insurance, they have zero appetite because obviously they're taking all the risk then. If a flood were to happen and the property has no value whatsoever, Now, all of a sudden, they're stuck with the mortgage, and there's nothing they can do because the property's not even for – they can't even sell the property anymore.
So Desjardins not doing it on the Quebec side or Ontario side too?
Quebec for now, but and it's only, I think, 0 to 20-year flood zones right now. But what I'm my question is this going to change now? As the flood maps change with environmental change, are we not going to be able to get mortgages or insurance on homes you may already have?
Well, again, that's the risk, right? The homeowners of those properties, if I'm one of them, I'm considering maybe getting my property on the market now if I'm on the edge of a flood zone and maybe about to be designated that my property's in a flood zone. I'm probably getting out sooner rather than later because, again, you're not going to be able to get any financing. Listen, if you're free and clear, have no mortgage, no problem. But if you need financing on it, that's where you're going to struggle.
Well, this is the problem. If you're getting a property on the water, you better get conditions. You better make sure you can get it insured and get a mortgage.
Absolutely. Those are conditions that need to go in there, especially in
and
areas.
On the purchase agreement, right? I mean, I don't see it often on the purchase agreement, but we're starting to see it more now. But for the longest time, that was never on a purchase agreement or on a Schedule A as a condition. But
you mean insurance?
It's critical because you need to have insurance in place for the lender to lend you money. They make it very clear.
We've put those in our contracts for years and years, probably decades, where we put in there, you know, lawyer approval, insurance. mortgage, excuse me, you know, financing, home inspection, things like that. Those are all standard conditions.
You know what the problem is? A lot of people, when they buy a house, they don't do the insurance shopping until after they've got the mortgage approved. They probably waived by then, and then they realize, oh, my God, I got a problem with the insurance, not realizing it. It's important to do that ahead of time, almost at the same time your offer has been accepted, while you're waiting for your financing to be approved, while you're doing the home inspection. You might want to send that purchase agreement and the information to your insurance company and make sure that you've got an insurance policy.
Because most people just assume they're getting insurance, right? But no, that's important.
And then there are things you have to do. If you have a wood-burning fireplace, get it certified.
Wet certified, lots of things like that for sure.
There's lots happening. Wow. There's lots. I mean, the days of a straightforward purchase agreement with the financing and home inspection condition are long gone. There's so many other aspects you got to look at.
How many pages are your agreements now?
Oh, they're long. They're long. I mean, the paperwork, even to list a property nowadays, you know, we went from having a small little book to like a Bible. Like, it's crazy how much paperwork you have to go through to list a property nowadays.
You're earning your money, buddy.
We're earning our money, that's for sure.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Paul Rushworth is here. Frank Napolitano is here.
Steve Greger is here. Greg Tilley's here.
First-time homebuyer initiative is not going to be here as of March 21st. Everybody's so broken up about that.
Oh, yeah, terrible news.
Boy, I do have a question.
Uproar?
The lenders have already stopped accepting applications, by the way. So
I do have a question for you, though. If you got this, does it make sense to, when you renew your mortgage or shop your mortgage around, pay the government back as soon as you can?
I don't think you can.
Yeah, you can. You can refinance it and pay them their share now and be done with
because
it.
Because it's only going to appreciate,
you
right?
You should have done that before COVID happened is what you should have
done. Well, but most people got it just before COVID. So we had a client that got it just before COVID. Then the prices started appreciating, and he was in a position where he took a variable. So he was able to pay off the mortgage, refinance it quickly, and give the government their share, and now he's off it, and the property appreciated even faster. So
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Should you take care of that sooner than later? Yeah,
if you can.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, absolutely. Keep in mind, this came in 2019. Our market went insane in 2020, 2021. The
government's going to make
a government's making some good money on this.
They would have made more if anybody cared about the program.
But what's the budget? April what?
In the teens. I'm not sure what.
Yeah. So watch for something like that. Because again, we're approaching an election year. So they understand that housing's a big issue. So watch for something like that to come across. I mean,
it'll be something like with no teeth, though.
Well, because I hope they understand that if you're looking for share ownership, then that's going to be stopped. Now, again, I think Canadians are a little bit more. They have an appetite to become homeowners, and maybe they would accept it a little bit more today. But it's so the qualifying, the way they put the qualifying was, it was only basically for small centers. And I think they did that purposely. Nobody in Toronto could take advantage of it because the house prices were way too much. Nobody in Vancouver. So they meant to actually prop up some of the others. So in theory, they had some good ideas. They didn't think it through, which, again, most things the government does these days, they don't think through too carefully. But, you know, had they not put that share ownership part in there, I think it would have been a very successful program. So it'll be interesting to see if they come out with it with a new, and I think they will, because obviously housing is so critical in our country right now. So I think they will come up with something. It'll be interesting to see what it is. As long as they stay away from the home ownership part of it, the share ownership, I think they're going to be in good shape. And then I think the other thing that needs to be really looked at, and I know that OSFI won't do it because they're scared of heating up the real estate market. The reason the real estate market's going to heat up is, well, look in the mirror. They're the ones that are to blame because they haven't built enough houses. They've let more Canadians, more people come to Canada. So they're creating a problem. So now even Tiff Macklem is scared to lower interest rates too quickly because he's scared that we're going to have the same scenario that we saw during the pandemic where house prices started to skyrocket across the country.
And that's going
to
happen.
So they want to prevent that from happening, but... So, like, what's the balance there? You're going to keep interest rates high and Canadians suffering, all the Canadians that have homes right now, they need to find that perfect balance, and I don't know that they're going to be able to
do it. Because these big mortgages are coming up now.
So, this year isn't so bad. This year is $186 billion in mortgage and renewals. Next year is something like $360 billion, and the year after that is $480 billion. Like, the staggering numbers of Canadians that are in mortgages that range anywhere between 1.5 and 2.2%, all of a sudden, if the interest rates are where they are today, the real estate market's in trouble. Like we might see what we saw in the U.S. in 2007.
But you're saying 187 or whatever million this
billion,
year.
Yeah. $1 billion.
Billion, yeah. And then we're getting worse and worse. The rates have to be down by the time we're here. Next year, this time, we're 3.5.
I think everybody agrees with that. And I think even the Bank of Canada would agree with that. The problem is that the fear is that because they've let so many Canadians come into the country and they haven't built houses, that now the house prices are going to start to skyrocket and they're trying to avoid that.
And truthfully, they are.
Yeah.
They're going to skyrocket. They are. I mean, we're not going to see what we saw at early 2022, Jan, Feb, March, and April. But
Never say never.
Well,
Comes down to supply and demand.
We're going to see a mini version of 2022 once the rates start coming down. I can guarantee it. Because there's so much pent-up demand. You know, there's people sitting on the sidelines that are dying to get into the market. That as soon as the rates come down and they can afford to get into the market, it's going to go insane.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Sandy, who's been waiting a while. Would have got to you sooner, Sandy, but these guys won't shut up.
Oh, sorry, Sandy. You know, it's all Frank. Frank.
That's fine. That's fine. I do have a question. I'm hoping all three of you can give me some advice, but especially Paul.
You don't want Steve's advice, though, just so you know. Go ahead.
I'm a landlord. I have a N-unit townhouse.
Yep.
With we paid a premium for the lot, so it's quite a big lot, fenced in. It's about 3 years old. So our tenants right now they're great tenants. We're very happy with them, and so they're up for a rental increase. Now my husband and I have been debating back and forth because the market stipulates right now we could be getting about 2,600 the average.
Easily, yeah.
For that size house. They're much lower
18.
Than that.
What are you getting, 18, 19?
$2,350.
Well, that's not bad. So much
not
worse
bad.
Out there.
Go ahead with your question. I already know the answer, but go ahead with your question.
Okay. Well, my husband is like, we need to have it comparable to everybody. Because, you know, we have a mortgage, we have everything else. But to me, because they are good tenants, you know, everything is going up in price as well. So I feel for both sides. You know what I mean? I feel for them as well because they, you know, it's a struggle for everybody these days to make ends meet. But he's like, this is a business. We need to, you know, this is to pay our mortgage as well. We still have to pay some, obviously, and insurance and everything else that goes with it. So he's saying it should be at least at the average, the 26. So I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe 2450. I could raise it 100.
Well, first of all, you can't just decide where you want to raise it to. You know, you have to go to the landlord and tenant board and see what every year they allow you to raise it. For example, I think last year was 2.1% or something.
This is a newer house.
So it's after 2018.
Yes.
So here's the thing about having a great tenant and raising rent. Yes. It's a sticky line. You know, I've always in the past, I've never raised on a good tenant ever.
Right.
The problem being is the market's gone so crazy that my tenants are so under rented right now. It's nuts. Like I'm thinking of selling a couple of my units, which I never thought I'd do, but I'm thinking of selling a couple of my units. But the problem is no investor is going to buy my unit because they're so under rented. So you have to keep up with the times. As much as I love your philosophy that you care about the renter and you want to make sure that they're happy and you're happy and they're a good renter. But at the same time, it is also a business. It's a business. I mean, you need to stay with market rents and, take care of yourself at the same time as taking care of the tenant. But it's a sticky, I mean, if you have a thought of selling anytime soon, you have to make sure that your rents are market rent. If you're planning on, keeping that unit for 20 years and you want to be somewhat nice to your tenant, great. But I
think you need to compromise.
I think
compromise is a good idea because good tenants, I mean, Paul, you've been through this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Good tenants are really, really hard to find. Somebody that looks after your house like it's their house are really difficult to find. And I'm sure you've seen stories of tenants not paying rent and not being kicked out for 6 months, 8 months, 9 months. The last thing you need is for them to leave, and then you get a tenant that you think is good, and then you go through this. You're going to regret losing that good tenant.
And if you if you raise it to $2,450 for an N unit townhome, that's totally reasonable. I mean, that's sort of a smaller middle unit.
As long as they don't leave, of course. Where are they going to go, right?
But yeah, but if they do leave, she jacks up the rent.
Where are they going to go and find a comparable place?
They're not. That's why
it's a good compromise. Yeah. That's why I'm saying it might be a win-win for both you guys, where you get a little bit more. You're probably not at market value, but they feel like you still cherish them as tenants. And they stay and they look after your house the way you would look after.
And are they good tenants?
Oh, they are. They are.
Okay. Well, that's it. I was in one of excuse me. I was in one of my investment properties this week, and it looked like hell.
And
the worst part is it's so under rented. It looks like hell, and I feel trapped. There's nothing I can do about it. So if you have a good tenant who's going to take care of that property, and you feel like you can compromise a little bit on price.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, you said it's a business, right? What'd you pay for the property 3 years ago?
Oh, I know it's gone up. We want to keep it long term. We're not interested in selling it.
No, but that's the business part too, right? That's the part that makes sense business-wise. What you paid for it versus what it's worth today, the value has gone up tremendously. Your business has done very, very well. But just don't throw away a good tenant that's been really part of the good business decision that you have.
Yeah. And the best part of this call, happy marriage. You're both right.
That's right. Well, that's right. You want to do what's right for the tenant, but you also want to take care of yourself at the same time. And I think if you raised it to $2,450, I think you're definitely it's a
win-win.
It's a win-win. I think it's a win-win.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you so much for your advice, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Even though you didn't get my take on it.
Yeah. But,
Stephen? What is your take?
I'm thinking hubby doesn't agree. He wants $2,600, but $2,450 is
the right.
At least
we brought her up a little bit.
There we go.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Paul Rushworth here. Frank DiPaolo
here.
What's that?
No, we didn't hear your 2 cents worth on the last question there from Sandy.
Oh, yeah. I told you off the air.
Yeah.
And you guys said, why? I wish I would have said that.
And on the air? Go ahead now. Let the listeners
hear your wisdom. You said kick the bum out is what
kick
you said.
Kick them out.
No, I said leave the husband.
But you know what? It is like we had that debate off the air, and it's
6-1 though.
Yeah, it's like, what do you do? Do you do the right thing by your tenant and keep the rent low?
But even going to $2,450, you're still keeping it low relatively.
If she's an N unit with a big yard like that, you're 26 minimum.
Yeah.
26 minimum. So if you keep it at $2,450 or $2,425, whatever,
yeah.
It's still a win-win for both. And, and Frank said something as we were just getting off the air. He's like, you know what? With the way tenants are nowadays and how the tenants have all the rights and run the roost, you get a good tenant. Sometimes it's okay to take a little less money to have that golden tenant. Listen, I have a lot of investment properties and I got some great tenants and I have some terrible tenants, and it's worth its weight in gold to have those good tenants.
What do you do if you have tenants and you want to get out of the landlord game?
That's a tough.
Is there a way to just give notice to a tenant saying that, you know?
Oh, there's a way, but you just make sure you open your wallet when you say, you know, like.
But if you have all the time in the world, you've got a year.
So listen, I have investment properties, and there's some I'm thinking of selling. My tenants have been there for a long time. They're on month to month. And, you know, most likely because they've been there a long time and you can only increase it so much, most likely these are under-rented places and no one's going to want to pick them up as an investment. They're going to want to move into that property. Well, the problem is, you know, in the past you would have been able to say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Tenant, just so you know, I'm selling and, you know, whoever's going to buy it, it's going to move into it. And so bye-bye. Not the same anymore. It's not the same. You are actually paying someone to leave your property now. Paying someone. And sometimes if you get a good tenant, the problem being if you're under rented with the way the rents have gone, they know they're not going to get a rent like that anywhere else. So they know they're paying more. They're in the driver's seat. So they're saying, you know what? No problem. I want X amount of months of rent to go
away.
Which
I've seen happen, which I've had clients that have done that where they want to get their property back. And even though it's month to month, they refuse to leave. And all of a sudden, now you're stroking them a check for 3, 4, 5 months to leave 100%. At a time so that they've got some money to go rent somewhere else. So.
But technically, if they're month to month, how much notice?
60 days.
60
two
days,
full months.
60 two, days, two full months. Months. Yeah, 60 days notice, 2 full months. But even then, you're still paying someone to leave. The tenants have all the rights. And I was in, we had a client who was overseas. They wanted to sell their property. They were never coming back to Ottawa. And they asked me if I could check on the unit. I went and checked on the unit and it was disgusting. Like dogs peeing everywhere. I was watching a dog pee all over the wall as we were talking. And I was like, do you clean that up afterwards? And she's like, no, they just pee where they want. The house was disgusting. And the landlord ended up paying 3 months rent just to get rid of this person to sell this property.
You know what? It would be worth it, especially with tenants.
It's just going to get worse. Yeah. That dog is peeing and peeing and peeing. Yeah. It's just going to get worse.
Oh, the baseboards were all ruined. Yeah. The carpet was all ruined. Everything was ruined. And it's just...
And you have no recourse. Eh?
Zero recourse. That's the problem with Ontario. You have zero recourse. And don't get me wrong. There's a lot of amazing tenants out there. And you know what? I have some amazing tenants. But there's some tenants out there that just treat your house like a garbage.
And I guess that's the other half of the coin is that if you're telling a tenant to get out... Then they're not going to care about the property at all. The remaining time
at all. So you could just imagine this house I was just talking about. You can imagine after this tenant left what it actually looked like. It was to the point where they had to rip up all the carpets because the urine smell was just wrong. It was terrible.
Yeah, so, you got to rip them out and you got to paint the subfloor and you got to do everything. A lot you got to do.
Redo the baseboards, everything. Like the dog was peeing all over the wall. So now you're talking about drywall and fixing all that stuff and, you know, curtains and ripping down.
How do I
curtains.
Become an investor? In
yeah. Well, you know what? It's the sad thing is I've been touting for the longest time, pick up as many doors as you can, pick up as many doors. That's how you build wealth. And I still believe it.
But that was before properties doubled too.
Yeah. It's just tougher. Cash flow than now.
I still believe that, but it's just, I don't know what it is. Over the last couple of years, the tenant's mindset has just shifted to where it's like, we don't give a sugar about your house. I almost said the bad word.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost said Frank's word. They don't give a sugar about your house anymore.
No.
And you know what? Some do. So I'm not saying that, but because I'm in the business and I've walked into so many properties that our sellers are owning that have tenants in them. And I'm just like, I look at the tenants and I'm like, what is wrong with you?
You know what it's like? It's like the 80s and 90s when kids discovered that they had rights.
Yeah.
That, you know, parents just can't get away with making me do this anymore.
Yeah.
It's the same with tenants now. We're in a new cycle where they just go, I don't have to leave.
Yeah. You know what? You know where I put my money is in the MIC. Hey,
yeah.
MIC.
Yeah.
Right? It's an easy investment. Just throw your money in there and let Frankie and Mike do all their work. And
yeah.
So
worked for a lot of people in our city that have that do nothing but praise us for the fact that it's been not, they put the money away and they just don't have to worry about it. They just get statements.
Yeah, you don't worry about cash flow. All you do is exactly.
You don't worry. You do, and again, I mean, you have options where you can take the interest out or you can just let it accumulate. So and watch your investment grow that much faster. It's been it's been really good. And I think last time I talked to Mike, we were in the $90, $95 million range on our mix. Nice. So it's grown at a pace, and everybody's pretty impressed when we talk to people outside of our core, and then there's some mix in Toronto, and they're truly impressed at how you know, and Mike's done the majority of it because I run the brokerage side and Mike runs the mix side. But, you know, just doing it at the right pace so that we never have, because the last thing you want is have too much of the investor money sitting idle.
And you didn't grow too fast.
We didn't grow fast. We just did it at the right pace. When the pandemic started, I mean, everybody was worried about their real estate. Everybody was worried about, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was worried their real estate, how prices were going to crash, yeah. Not go the other way. I mean, they ended up going the other way. But Mike took time during the pandemic to call every single investor and say, hey, just to let you know, we're not seeing any, you know, they were worried about people not making payments. We didn't see any of that, which was fantastic. And it's just, again, and again, we continue to plan on growing it at a pace that makes sure that the investors are protected and we're not making any unwise decisions when it comes to lending. We're very, very conservative on the lending side.
So you're anxious to sell those townhomes so you can get in?
I'll be very honest with you. I'm not. I'm not going to say.
Keep in mind, your tenants could be listening.
I don't care because I have some. Listen, I have some amazing tenants.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also have some terrible tenants.
Yeah, yeah.
Not terrible, but you know, just like I said, I walked into my house the other day. And it was disgusting. Yeah. You know, like no, I just there's other investments out there as well. I mean, I've always been pushing, you know, investment properties.
There's just different ways to invest in real
estate.
There's
different ways to invest in real estate. I'm still a big believer in investment properties, big believer. But I'm also know now that the pendulum has swung to the tenant's favor, yeah. And it's tough to be a landlord these days.
But it's been that way forever, except it seems to be getting worse.
It's getting worse.
Well, as things get tougher, right? That's the problem. As things get tougher for even hardworking Canadians to pay their mortgages, they're struggling. Tenants are going through the same thing for sure.
But keep in mind, landlords are too. Like I have tons of mortgages that I have to pay every single month. And when I have to fix up houses.
And a tenant doesn't pay you, you still got the bank doesn't say, oh, tenant didn't pay you. Don't worry about it. You don't have to make your mortgage payment. That doesn't go away.
Here was a downfall. 2 years ago, going through pandemic, Doug Ford said, tenants, you don't have to pay if you don't want to.
That was a bad
one. Listen, I have in my commercial property in Canada, I have a major tenant in there, like major. They decided they just don't want to pay me. And that was okay because Doug Ford said, you don't have, if you can't afford to pay your rent, you don't have to pay. Yeah. And that's where everything changed. Everything changed at that point right there.
Wow, this is all very rosy.
Let's not talk about politics on the air.
You know it's spring on Tuesday?
Yes.
The real estate market, despite everything we've talked about, the real estate market has done very well in our country. And you know, have we had some swings one way or the other? The upswings are much larger than the downswings. It's still your best investment.
Yes.
And it will continue to be your best investment. And most Canadians that are able to retire today, not because of the money they've saved in their bank accounts or RSPs, but because the equity they built in their real estate that gives them the opportunity and the financial freedom to be able to sell their property, take that money tax-free because they've lived in it, put it away in an investment, and be able to do what they want during their golden years.
So, really, you know, when you think about the pandemic hit 4 years ago and where everybody was concerned about real estate, it survived the best of all investments.
Well, and we work. I still remember the day they shut everything down. I went through like all my expenses, my visa, everything. And I'm like, cut, because this market is going to tank.
Yep.
And it didn't. Yeah. It didn't.
About surviving.
Yeah. Know? It went the other way. The other way. And listen, I'm not going to say everywhere in Canada, but let's say we'll talk about Ottawa. Our market has been stable for years. Last year was the first time our average sale price went down since 1996.
And it really happened in 1 month.
Yeah.
In January.
Pretty much. January killed us last year. Yeah. And
it went down so little compared to
5.5%.
So yeah, no, but it's gone up 50%.
It went up 50% in 3 years, and we went down 5.5%. So I think we're doing well.
No kidding.
Yeah.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You know, for the last show of winter, I think this is going quite well.
Very well. And actually, Steve, you were saying before we got on the air here, this is show 840.
840.
840.
838 for Steve.
Yeah.
You know, I was 18 when I started this show.
You know what? By the time we get to 900, though, we should be good.
Oh, you're optimistic.
Let's say 1,000.
Let's go to the phone. Dr. Al has been waiting in Avon. Hello, Al.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I got a financing question.
Yep.
We have a property that we inherited, my parents' place, and my son wants to buy it. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, right now, he's not in a scenario to afford it. It's a $1 million plus property. Now, my question is, he's got some money to put down right now, and then we'd give him a lease to own option or rent to own option for the balance of the down payment for the next 5 years, give or take. Is that something that a lender would recognize after 5 years? Say, okay, in the past 5 years, he's put $200,000-$300,000 down, and then finance the difference.
I wouldn't propose it that way to the lender. I would just go ahead and do it as gifted equity. So, you know, if it's a family member, immediate family member, like a son, a daughter, mom, dad, as long as it's immediate family member, the banks and lenders are okay with gifted down payments. So, you know, if you're selling the property for $1 million and your son over the next 5 years gives you 100, 200, 300, whatever that number is, we mm-hmm. would just, I would say, do up a purchase agreement where that gifted equity, you're saying that you're gifting X amount of dollars as gifted equity to your son, and then he gets the rest of the mortgage on his own. That's the best way to do it.
Okay. So there's no reason then to go, like he's saying he was talking to his bank, and the bank said, oh, yeah, we can do that and recognize, but I'm sure it's because they want to lock him in for the next 25 years or something.
Well, I'm sure it is. And at the same time, they say yes, 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 until it actually goes to the head office in Toronto on the underwriting team. And then all of a sudden, because they're taught to say yes, 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 and let's try and see what happens. And then they tell you no at the end. I think you're not going to give him possession of the property now. It sounds like he's going to give you money and maybe he'll be able to stay in it. Or is it a house? Is that what it is?
Yes.
So again, whether he pays you rent,
it'll be in dad's name, though, right?
Rent, it's still in your name right now. And then when you're ready to sell it to him, just do it as gifted equity. That's the best way to do it.
Perfect. Thanks for the info.
Thanks, Al.
All right.
By the way, 35% of first-time home buyers need help with their down payment. Yeah. I thought it'd be higher than that.
I thought it'd be way higher than that.
Yeah, it's getting there, I think.
25% get help on their payments now.
Yeah, that's the statistic that's scary. That's why the first-time home buyers are out of the market right now. I mean, that's the exact reason, you know, whether parents want to help them. And then you've got kids that don't want to help. They want to do this on their own, so they'll continue to live with parents. The parents are trying to nudge them out the door and we'll help you. But the kids are saying it's still going to cost me way more than it does to live at home. So maybe I'll continue to stay
here. But, you say that, but I feel like first-time home buyers, I really hope they're listening to this show. They need to get into this market sooner than later. They really
do. If you can.
If they can. I know it's hard. If you can get your parents' help and stuff like that. I'm seeing the prices where they are right now, and I just don't see them staying this low. I mean, there's builders nowadays that are advertising brand new, 1,800 square foot townhomes for $579, $589, $599.
I know, but if you put 5% down, your payment is $3,500, $3,800. Not many first-time home buyers can afford that.
I agree.
But so they're looking at it saying, I'd love to, I want to, but what am I doing to myself? Like, I'll have no money to do anything else. Like, everything is going towards the mortgage, and I have nothing left. So,
but look at rent, though. Like,
I get it.
What are they
going to do? 26.
26, you're right. So, yeah, they're a grand underwater, but it's...
But a grand is a lot of money.
If
you're struggling to put food on the table and you're struggling to do everything else.
Quick question. Yeah. He's got a $75,000 home equity line of credit.
Yep.
Variable rate is 7.5%.
Yeah, the adjustable. So he can convert that. Most banks give you the option to convert that to a mortgage. If you convert it to a variable rate mortgage, you might be able to get prime minus a half, prime minus 3/4. And then once the other mortgage comes up, if you have another mortgage on the house, when they come up together, then you can probably put them together. But you'll save about 1% in interest because obviously he's a prime plus. He'd go to prime minus, he or she. And then at the same time, you're putting money towards the principal because if you just have a line of credit, you get a statement, it's interest-only payment. So
what would that do for cash flow?
Well, again, cash flow, you'd have less cash flow because now you're putting money towards the principal where now it's only interest, but you're paying down the mortgage quicker and you're saving 1% in interest. So that would be the goal.
Worth it?
Well, it depends on the scenario. I'd need to know more about the client and their scenario.
He's 6 foot two.
175 pounds. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you know it's a he? It could be a she. Or so tells you it's a he.
Doesn't
you
eat as know. Well as he should.
Because
you know.
It actually says he.
He. Okay. There you go. Okay.
My goodness. I can't believe
it. Hey, investment properties, Paul. Like you wanted to just clarify. Like,
oh yeah, I've had a couple. I've had a couple text messages from people saying, "Oh, so I shouldn't buy investment properties?" And that is not what I'm trying to say. Thanks, Frank. But what I was trying to say:
Be careful who you
rent to. Just make sure that if you are buying investment properties, I don't care if it takes 2 months to find the perfect tenant. Find the perfect tenant.
Yeah.
Trust me.
And what are you looking for? Good credit score.
You're looking for a good credit score.
References,
solid job. And someone who has pride of ownership. Like, I would actually ask the last landlord, if there is a last landlord.
That's the only reference I would take.
Yeah.
Because references, listen,
my friend Sarah. Call my friend Sarah.
Of course they're not going to say anything bad about you.
So call the ex-landlord and just say, how do they keep the place? Is it neat and tidy and clean and pride of ownership? That's what you want nowadays. So am I a strong advocate for investment properties? 100%.
Is there nothing you can put in the contract that if you don't upkeep the property?
Nope.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Can't do that.
Nothing.
Seemed like such a good idea.
Yeah.
Birthdays, Frank.
Yeah, maybe we'll get Sean Reed on the air next week, and we can get a segment off and not talk, because when Sean gets on the phone, birthdays, Alessandra, Alfio's beautiful daughter, who was born 20 minutes before my daughter, celebrated her birthday yesterday. Alexia Ferdinand from our office, celebrating her birthday today. My beautiful daughter, Katrina, celebrated her birthday yesterday, my happiest day of my life, 33 years ago. And my granddaughter.
Your other kids better not hear that.
Oh, no.
Happiest day. One of the happiest.
To that point.
Yeah.
On that day.
By far the happiest day of my life. So, and my granddaughter, Amelia, who turned 4 months yesterday as well.
Oh, here
so.
We're going to get a monthly update.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get the monthly update. And a new granddaughter coming soon. So, and then my good buddy, Mike Waldo DePaolo, who celebrated his birthday today. And we're going out to dinner tonight. So, if anybody can find Waldo, yeah. Wish him a happy birthday.
I don't have any birthdays, but I know Mr. Tilly does.
My younger, much smarter brother has his birthday tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
So, awesome.
Which he's always enjoyed, built-in party every year.
And his name?
Doug.
Doug.
Doug the Leprechaun.
Doug Tilly.
Yeah, Doug Tilly. Happy birthday, Doug.
Will there be any alcohol involved tomorrow?
I can't say one way or the other, but 100% yes.
Apparently, we need to make the show an extra hour with these birthdays now.
No, that's just Frankie.
Yeah. Stop it. And happy St. Patty's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day. Have a great week, folks.
Enjoy. Be safe.
And keep supporting local businesses and charities.